This week, the Alaska Board of Fisheries unanimously voted to open the Western Aleutians to cod fishing, a challenge to the National Marine Fisheries Service, which had recommended a closure in an effort to protect the endangered western stock of Steller sea lions. Before the decision took place, Doug DeMaster sat down with KUCB to answer questions about the Steller sea lion biological opinion, the new regulations put in place, and why the western stock is having so much trouble compared to the eastern stock. DeMaster is the science director at NIMS Alaska Fisheries Science Center.
Just starting generally, can you tell us where we are right now in this process?
Well, Steller sea lions are listed under the Endangered Species Act. The groundfish fisheries in Alaska regularly requires authorization in terms of the permits. This time around, in terms of the Section 7 consultation under the Endangered Species Act, the agency finalized a biological opinion that found jeopardy and adverse modification of critical habitat. Under the Endangered Species Act, that has to be mitigated. That's the law. So the agency proposed mitigating measures or conservation measures, and those are the ones I think for the most part people are familiar with. They basically close the Western Aleutian Island area for fishing for aca mackerel and cod. They make additional restrictions in the central Aleutians and some additional restrictions in the eastern Aleutians. Those are obviously going to be problematic for a number of the sectors of the fleet that fish out there.
So I guess one of the sort of hot topics that has come up in the past couple of months is there was a lot of hope that NOAA would accept the North Pacific Fishery Management Council's RPA. Can you sort of elaborate on why you all did not and why that wasn't sufficient?
Yeah, the council in a meeting in August, emergency meeting or a special meeting of the council, gave the agency a series of conservation measures that they had proposed. They hadn't had a lot of time to develop them, and they were they didn't have the opportunity to look at how those might remove jeopardy or adverse modification of this critical habitat. The agency considered those conservation measures. Overall or in total, the agency made a determination that that package of recommendations did not remove jeopardy or adverse modification of critical habitat, so it couldn't accept the entire package. It did, or the agency, where we could, we did adopt elements of that package in an effort to try to minimize the economic impact of these mitigating measures while still removing jeopardy and adverse modification of critical habitat.
And could you talk a little bit about the metric that you're using to decide when the western stock is stable enough to remove these closures?
Well, we have in the recovery plan, so we have in 2008, we have a Steller Sea Lion Recovery Plan. That plan has guidelines for recovery, and both for downlisting an endangered to threatened and going from threatened to delisting. Those guidelines, there's really three, I think, that are probably important here. One of them has to do with kind of the overall recovery of the stock. And basically, the current population of the western stock appears to be increasing, at least in U.S. waters, at about 1.5% per year. So that's good news. Since 2000, the population has been recovering. We'd like to see it recover a little faster than that. The eastern stock, for example, is growing at about 3% per year. But that overall recovery is one metric. A second metric we use is any of these subregions, and we've got six subregions, and the Western Aleutians is one, are any of those subregions declining, and have they declined more than in abundance by more than 50% since 2000? And the answer is that the Western Aleutians is very close, so they're about 45% down from 2000. Then you've got the third metric has to do with no two of these subregions. So in this case, let's use the Western Aleutians and the Central Aleutians as an example. No two subregions that are next to each other can be in statistically significant decline. Now, we aren't there yet. The Western Aleutian subpopulation is declining at a statistically significant rate. The Central Aleutians is declining, but it's not statistically significant. So the agency basically has to manage this population at least along these guidelines, that it has to end the decline in the Western Aleutians, and we'd like to see the Central Aleutians actually start recovering. So that's kind of the minimum we need to see. That'll probably take 3 to 4 surveys, and given we do surveys every other year right now, that'll probably take 6 to 8 years to kind of see if this current, if the conservation measures that were implemented in January 1 of this year are actually having the desired effect.
And I know that you guys don't exactly have a specific number of sea lions that need to be in this area to downlist, but for sort of just a layman, what would be a ballpark figure that would show that some sort of recovery is happening?
Well, again, the overall, you know, we're at something on the order of 55,000 to 60,000 stellar sea lions in the Western stock, depending on how you count them. Full recovery would require something in excess of 100,000 for the U.S. population of the Western stock. Because it's hard to count all the animals and get the correction factors, we're actually using this index of or trend in abundance as a metric. And there we want to see, that, at least in the Western Aleutians, going from about minus 6 to 7% per year to a stable population. Mm-hmm. That's what we'd like to see.
And so from what I understand, you all were using 14 indicators to determine the cause of the decline, and only one of these indicators seems to suggest that it's poor nutrition that is contributing to their decline. Could you talk about this indicator and why this is enough to trigger?
I think that's a really good question, and it's actually misunderstood a little bit. These 14 indicators were identified by a panel of experts, and they have to do with nutritional stress. If there was nutritional stress, what kind of physiological and behavioral responses would you expect? So we looked at the Eastern stock, where they were recovering just like we wanted them to, and the Western stock. We only had data for most of those metrics from the Central Gulf or the Eastern Aleutians. And so most of the metrics, when you compare the Eastern stellar sea lions with the sea lions from the Central Gulf or from the Eastern Aleutians, the results were not consistent with nutritional stress. For the Western Aleutians and the Central Aleutians, the areas where we implemented these conservation measures, there we really only have one metric, and that metric is the ratio of pups to non-pups. And for that metric, even though it's only one metric, the data strongly are consistent with the nutritional stress hypothesis. Now, I said consistent. This isn't a cause and effect kind of analysis, but the one metric we have good data on in the Western Aleutians is this ratio of pups to non-pups. And when you compare that ratio in the Western Aleutians with the animals from the Eastern stock, it's very clear that ratio is much lower in the Western Aleutians. That's consistent with the nutritional stress hypothesis.
What are the clear differences you can see right now that are contributing to the Eastern stock's recovery and the continued decline of the Western stock?
Well, clear differences is difficult. We have a few pieces of information we have. Where we have the ratio of pups to non-pups, and that's kind of an indicator of productivity. The Eastern stock has a much higher ratio of pups to non-pups, so it looks like their pup production of females in the Eastern stock is considerably better, higher than in the Western. So that's one. As I said, the overall trend in non-pups in the Eastern stock, it's increasing about 3%. In the Western populations, it's overall increasing about 1.5%. We've got some differences in food habits. The Eastern stock, where we have food habits data, tends to have a much more variable diet, whereas in the Western stock, they tend to be foraging on pollock, cod, acromackerel. They have a much less diverse diet. I wish we had better data across the whole Western stock in terms of birth rates and survival rates. We have some data from the Central Gulf and from the Western Gulf and Eastern Aleutians, but unfortunately we don't have any marked animals that we can follow over time in the Western Aleutians. So we can't compare the vital rates in that area with the similar data we have for the eastern stock.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges to collecting data on this population?
Well, they're big animals. You know, they're the size of a VW bug. They're about, the females can be up to 1,000 pounds. The males can be up to 2,000 pounds. They tend to haul out on areas that are slippery, wet, and the next stop from handling an animal is in the water. They're logistically hard to get out to. They're, the Western Aleutians are a long way from any of the ports that we have access to. Techniques we have are relatively limited. We know how to, we can attach radio tags or satellite tags. We learn a lot from that. We can brand the animals so we can follow them over time and learn something about their survival and their reproductive rates. We can collect scats and look at what they're eating. We have some other techniques we can look at in terms of diet. And, of course, we can census the animals from aircraft or from vessels. So those are most of the techniques we have. In addition to worrying about nutritional stress, we're worried about predation. So we have to do some work on killer whales. We need to do some work on contaminants to see if there's certain hot spots where maybe in some areas contaminant levels are compromising, say, the reproduction. We haven't seen much evidence for disease, but it's something we're always looking for. A lot of those things we can get with what are called biopsies, where you take a small plug from an animal. We can actually do that without handling the animal. So those are some of the techniques, at least, we can apply.
And the challenges to studying this species have become sort of a point of focus for critics of the biological opinion, the state of Alaska, commercial fishing interests, community leaders in the region have all complained that there has not been enough research to justify this decision and that the models are not enough. And I was just wondering if you could respond to that criticism.
Well, I mean, clearly we would like to have more information, but I think probably the bottom line is the Endangered Species Act has a mandate. You have to use the best available data, and then the agency has to make a determination or ensure that it's removed the likelihood that a given act, in this case commercial fishing, will jeopardize or adversely modify critical habitat. In this case, the agency, with the available data, made a determination that commercial fishing may jeopardize or adversely modify critical habitat. So because of the mandates of the Endangered Species Act, even with the paucity of data in some areas, the decision was made that conservation measures had to be implemented.